Rosales.
Here.
Schwartz.
Here.
Hartke.
Here.
Kibler. Maxwell.
Here.
James. Quisenberry.
All right, first thing we need is, first order of business is the approval of the minutes. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from December 3rd, 2013? Thank you, Ms. Rosales. Thank you, Mr. Hartke. Seconded by Mr. Hartke. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passed unanimously. And next, I need an approval or a motion for the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Hartke moves, Mr. Kibler seconds. Any discussion on the agenda? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Okay, now we move to public participation. Mr. Chris Evans.
Chris Evans, District 8. Thanks again for enduring public participation. I want to talk tonight about the possible jail expansion. And while that's getting passed, I'm passing around a few things to look at when we talk about this issue. Tonight I want to call to your attention an email sent by Harmony Gurley to Sheriff Walsh in January of 2012. And in this email, Harmony Gurley is the mental health nurse at the time of this writing, the mental health nurse at the county jail. And in this particular, the first page is an email she sent describing the conditions of the jail for mentally ill offenders. And I've highlighted some of the more alarming portions of this email to suggest that that this facilities committee, before it considers building a mental health pod, ask itself, why are we prosecuting the mentally ill, and is it worth it when you look at the chilling description that Harmony Gurley puts together for us here? The second page is another email that she sent in January of 2012, and it warns about this is the recommendations of the National Institute of Corrections, where it warns of building a mental health pod and what that might lead to, which is may lead to more arrests for minor violations. The third page that I present, or the third next three pages that I've given you, is a long recent article about the use of isolation cells to house the mentally ill. And it's turning out to be, in the psychiatric community and the corrections community, they're discovering it's a very bad idea. And the unintended consequences is that we may be exasperating symptoms, we may be making things worse and creating more mentally ill people with the use of isolation cells, and some counties and some states are getting sued for big money over the misuse of isolation cells. And I don't have to tell you that we've lost 5 people while in isolation cells in this county. So, and then the next page is, so as we ask ourselves why are we housing the mentally ill in our jail, I think the police gave a very good presentation, a PowerPoint presentation, to something called, and I'm sorry I don't know this, but a CIT meeting. Representatives from all the departments gave a PowerPoint presentation, and Community Elements was there. Veterans Administration was there, and they gave a good presentation as to, from the police perspective, of why they're taking people to jail. And there it is. The mental health system has been dismantled in this state across the board. And so police are taking people to jail because there's nowhere else to take them, which creates a real perfect storm for us getting sued were we to have an incident at the jail with a mentally ill person. So I guess what I'm just want to leave you with tonight as we go forward to discuss these kinds of things, that what we really need is mental health facilities and to really account for why it is we are prosecuting the mentally ill. When Harmony Gurley testified in front of the Social Justice Task Force in the summer of 2012, it was asked, you know, what are the mentally ill in jail for? And she said 80% of them are there for small misdemeanors. So is it worth building a maximum security pod for things like disorderly conduct, you know, trespassing, you know, public intoxication or what? So I would hope that this facility committee would do its due diligence and find out why we're prosecuting the mentally ill. And I've got more stuff, but we can talk later, and I know my 5 minutes is up. Thank you for listening, and thanks for reading this.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. All right, next thing on our agenda is a presentation from the Sheriff's Office. And I think everybody knows Alan Jones.
I'm Alan Jones. I'm the Chief Deputy of the Sheriff's Office.
I'm going to get out of the way, so.
Okay. Thank you for asking us to come. Sheriff Walsh is unavailable tonight. He sends his regards. I want to point out that Captain Shane Cook, who is our jail administrator at the current time, is here with me tonight to learn and advise as necessary. The downtown jail has a bedded capacity of 131 people. That means there's 131 beds. We could take more people in there if we had portable storage or portable beds or put in additional beds. We no longer have a dormitory functioning at the downtown jail. The satellite jail has a bedded capacity of 182. The total capacity at the sheriff's office when you combine both facilities is 313. I point out to you that the number can be deceiving in some ways in that we could actually detain, if we were required to, more than 313 because of the temporary holding cells that we have at the front in the booking area. There would be larger numbers. This number gives you the beds we have currently in play. Now, this slide shows the history of the Sheriff's Office of 2004 to 2013 dealing with what we call the average daily population. The top line that you see there, the blue line, shows 2004 on the left, 2013 on the right. That's what we would be required to have housed to bed on average per day, and the top line. So as you see, going back to 2004, we were at a high, an average of 340. You know that our highest total is 313. As we move down through the past few years, the significant initiatives that have taken place across the community, the numbers that we have been dropping or stabilizing at below the bedded capacity, which is where we really want to be. What's of note out of this slide, as I look at it as the former administrator as a chief deputy, you'll notice that the purple line and the green line represent the sentenced and the pretrial. Now, the purple line in 2012 was below the sentenced, and they took a switch in 2013. The sentenced line that you see here does include those that were placed at home on enhanced home incarceration. So it incorporates this year, this history slide incorporates all of those numbers. When I bring up the 2013 summary, you can see the roller coaster that we were on in 2013 alone. The top line, the red line, those are the ones that we bedded. That's a combination of pretrial and sentenced people. That's people that actually stayed in the jail. The bottom line is the blue line is the home confinement, electronic home detention. And those show the average daily population for the month. And as you look at it, we started the month in January 2013 at about 242 people on average per day. And we finished December of 2013 on average 209. Now, that's very positive for us in a lot of different ways, in that reducing the population helps us with a lot of the different issues that we have in housing, classification, and the activities. Now, the sheriff's office doesn't have the ability to directly impact that number. Those numbers in the average daily population, the sheriff's office and the corrections division, have a lot to do with the number of people that are brought into the jail and the amount of days that they stay into the jail. So the amount of arrests, the volume of arrests, and the time that they're there before there's some sort of disposition. We have been having monthly meetings with the Criminal Justice Executive Committee. One of the things that we talk about, I present to them this summary. I present to them the number of arrests per month. I present to them the different length of stay issues. And we are seeing some good trends across the board in our housing populations, as you can see there. When I give you the next slide, the far left, the first number is the December 2013. Again, these are the monthly numbers, not the yearly at this point. We started out at 209 in December of 13. January, we ended with a 192. This past week, we finished February, and our average daily population was 182 people. Again, our total summaries for our facilities is 182 at the satellite, 131 downtown for 313 total. And the reason that I wanted to set the context here for you, and I want to talk about this, is that it's apparent and obvious question, why isn't everybody at the satellite jail now? Because at 182, if it's our average daily population, we could house them all at the satellite jail. And the importance that I wanted to share with you today is that it's because of separation needs, the types of inmates that we have, and the requirements that we have to keep them in separate locations in their best interest that prohibits us from doing things such as closing the downtown jail and stuff them all into a hole, fill a space, fill a bed. That's not proper corrections management, and that's not what we at the sheriff's office are going to do. And I'll tell you a couple little things about that. We know, and you know from documentation that you've had, that the ILPP said that neither of the jail facilities currently offer flexible range of housing options needed for the range of offenders that we handle. The range of offenders we handle go from misdemeanant to felony, pretrial to sentenced. Then they have subcategories of their own behavior. They have enemies that they can't be housed with, co-defendants. They have mental health. Some people just can't be with other people. Mentally, they can't handle it. They don't want it. They need special segregation or classification. ILPP told us that the structural deficiencies, proper segregation of special needs, mental health, and medical inmates has not been feasible, and we agree. We see that. We know it now. Our holding cells have been crowded with special needs inmates. In the booking area at the preliminary stages of the study were not defensible, and they were conditions, as were the conditions of downtown jail. That's from ILPP study. That's in the final report. That's page 14. I highlight the point about the booking area because, as I told you earlier, we can put more people in the booking area. But we agree with the determination that you don't want to crowd the holding area with special need inmates because that's not the best interest of them or the staff to put them in there. When people get arrested and they come in, the police departments bring them in, they come in various stages, intoxicated, able-bodied, not able-bodied, under the influence of something, suicidal, whatever state they are in, we will have to accept them and address that. And some people need time to cool off. They need to be in a cell by themselves or just one other person. Other people are violent and they don't want to be with somebody else. So we need to keep that area open. ILPP has suggested that. We agree. So if we filled every bed at the satellite, the only place we would have for anything else or anybody that got into a fight and had to be segregated would be to take them up to booking, which is already crowded. And we're working on that. There was a recent guest commentary in the News Gazette. Ms. Branham, who served on the Criminal Justice Task Force here locally, talked about the downtown jail. And one of the things she said is that she concurs with the With the almost universal view of those who have witnessed the conditions at this jail, the expenditure of millions of dollars of taxpayers' money has yielded what, in effect, is a dungeon. I wouldn't put a dog in it. Well, we don't go that far, but we do say that our downtown jail is not conducive to the best interests and the housing needs of the people we have. We have cooperated every step in the process here in the matters of the findings of ILPP, the Criminal Justice Task Force. We're working towards implementing many different things with the community, and we're all about moving forward in the best interest of everybody. The facility does not give us the ability to manage the inmates that we have. For example, recent reentry. There's a program that's starting now with Community Elements. They're in the process of writing a grant. I had the conversation with Sheila Ferguson today. Where am I going to house the reentry specialist that needs to come into the jail, Alan? I'm sorry, I don't have any office space at the jail to give you. I don't have any unavailable space anywhere at the satellite jail to give you. We can go downtown, but the majority of our inmates are at the satellite jail and not downtown. So we have to try to figure out how we're going to do that. She said, well, if you ever get to the point where you can do something, please consider the reentry program people and the rest that are working at the mental health program we have provided so that we can have a space near them to work with them. I'll be glad to do that. Sheriff Walsh has noted to you, and even in his recent letter to you, that he has told you that the specific layout of our jails is not conducive to the needs of the current inmate population and staff. He even told you in September 2013 that he wanted to make it clear, even if our number of inmates is substantially reduced, we do need to provide the right kind of space to handle the current inmate problems, desirable programs, safe, and that's for staff and inmates, and legally required separation, as well as the appropriate and cost-effective security levels provided. Again, this is not a new stance for Sheriff Walsh in the Sheriff's Office. Recently, you should have received a letter from Cal, Dr. Cal, our friend, with ILPP. We have been working with him and his staff. Again, we consulted with them for some technical advice. We've made the changes to our classification system. We continue to address the various things that they present and suggest that we do, even in this letter that we read today. Cal mentions that in addition to reducing the population numbers, it's critical, the numbers is the critical need to provide difficult segregation of various inmates with the most demanding need for mental health, those designated as dangerous requiring high security separations. Existing facilities lack the necessary segregation opportunities. Merely reducing the population below capacity does not satisfy the segregation issues. It's kind of the same old drum that I hit you with. We agree that the inmates, the arrestees that have come to the jail and increasingly have more mental health and medical needs. And we want to make sure that we're providing them the best institution we can. I've shown you our numbers. I give you a statement today that we're down, I think our population today was 155 people. I'm going to show you two examples of what happens and why we can't get them all into one facility. First thing, January 10th, this was our first endeavor. Over Christmas break, while some of us were off and some of us were working, we started talking about the idea of, you know what, our population's down. 170 was our total that day. We can put them all in the satellite jail. Let's do it. We sat down and started to take a look at that, and you'll see on your left-hand side is the downtown jail, and it has the different blocks. The numbers in red, and this was provided with your letter from the sheriff, the numbers in red indicate the number of inmates that are actually in that cell or block. The number in the black number indicates the total who could be in there. A and B block are generally our smallest blocks. We use those for people who have some special segregation that are not necessarily mental illness, not necessarily something that's medical, but somebody who may, for example, on this date, January 10th, A block could hold four people. It had two people in it. B block could hold three, had two. And in that situation, those people were actually separated because they had enemies or co-defendants and they couldn't be housed together. One of them actually requested protective custody. Look at the numbers, though. 18 in C block, empty. D block, 6, empty. 18 in F block, empty. 18 in G block, empty. And that's good. We're with that. We appreciate that. The important thing, though, that drives the reason we have to keep the downtown open is the very next column, I-1, I-2, I-3, I-4. Those are the individual cells, and for whatever reason, whether it be medical, suicidal, special needs, or they just simply cannot be housed with anybody else, those cells must be used to allow for the separation and segregation that we have to for these people in their best interest. Now, these are not the greatest cells in the world, okay? But they're the only options we have, because when you look to the right and we look at the satellite jail, there's 182 possible, 142 are there that day. Our booking is the column on the left, F1, F2, F3, traditionally for females. H1, H2, all the way down to 8, those are, H stands for holding, and they're the different types of holding cells that we have up there. When you look at these numbers, and you at face value say they're down, and I, as the jail administrator and chief deputy, am excited to see those numbers, but I can't move everybody to the satellite jail. This next diagram shows you the downtown jail. The blocks that you see in red are the individual cells that we have to rely on. Those are the only individual cells in the two jails that we use for this capacity. The thing that's important about these two cells is why they're segregation and why they're isolation and why they're not a good place to be. The officer can actually stand at the door and look in it and interact with the inmate inside. That's very important, because the people typically in these cells are on what we call 15-minute watch. They have to be checked and registered some sort of activity or connection with them at least every 15 minutes. The cells that are in yellow are some of the cells that we used for separation issues. For example, needed protective custody, didn't want to be with somebody else, had anxiety, you name it. It could cover a lot of different things. Those yellow cells are different because in order to see the inmate, if they were in their room, the officer would be standing at the green square or rectangle, and the officer would not be standing directly at their door and not able to look inside and interact with them. Because of the designs of our facilities, we have 5 cells that are not in booking where an officer can stand at the door and interact with the inmate. This is a very limiting situation for us. This is our satellite jail. The women generally use those, I guess it's pink, fuchsia, whatever, that list up there. That'd be the F1 and 2 and 3. The bigger one that has a 1 in it shows you there was one person in it that day in that large. That's the temporary intake holding for the females. The blue ones are typically our pre-arraignment folks that come in that are awaiting the determination of bond amount or getting ready to go to court. They may have a bond. Those red cells, though, are still in use as a segregation mental or medical scenario. And on this day, you had the ones and the twos will indicate how many people were each one of those rooms. Look at the rest of the housing units. You'll see the red numbers indicate how many people were in them. The black indicates how many they could hold. And I did make a mark there with the red cross to show you where the medical unit is and let you know that the medical and the nursing staff would have to travel some distance to get to booking, where at this point in time, we're forced to house some of those that are on the separation list.
Jones, can you tell me on that drawing right there where the women are right now, in general, that we keep? I mean, which area?
Well, as of this date, they were not here. But at this point in time, if I move to, well, I'll move to the next slide and I'll talk about this thing. But the women are now housed in A1 and A2. It was designed, we did some. There was no building of anything. We put tint on the windows and paint on the ground and established a few cameras, actually, to deal with some of the issues of visibility that Cal mentioned in his letter. What we have now, when I show you yesterday's population, you'll notice that it's down 15 from the January date that I gave you. Yesterday's population was 155. We had 23 people at the downtown jail. Outside of the one person in individual 5, if you'll take a look at that column there on the left-hand side, the far right of that, it says I-1, 2, 3, and 4 were empty. I-5, we have one person in it. That person had to be completely separated for psychological reasons. They cannot be housed with anybody else. That is on the east side. The ones in A and B block continue to be our people who have enemies. The one person in C block is on a discipline action right now. The three people in E block are protective custody. They don't want to be near anybody else, and they're, for whatever stature or design, they're separated. The 12 you have in G and H block are part of our new minimum classification change. We've taken and reclassified the entire jail, and the downtown system outside of the individual cells and those that might be on discipline is used for our minimum security folks. We've opened up the doors a little bit, allowed them leeway to go between the two blocks behind the secured door. We've set up some arrangements in the multi-purpose room. They can go down there and play bags or puzzles or games or do different stuff. We know the facility's not the best, but what we tried to do is expand the privileges for somebody who's able to go down there. The cable TV actually down there, there's no cable at satellite jail. So if you're a minimum classification inmate, you get to order more commissary than somebody who's a medium or max, and your behavior dictates a lot of where you go. So yesterday's population, we sat really well. We had another meeting yesterday morning, much to the surprise of the jail administration. We told them we're going to close downtown and send everybody to satellite. We're still not able to do it. We still can't do it. We could actually plug them in the different rooms, but in order to do it, we'll violate some of the principles that we've kind of agreed with Cal on here, and that we don't want to overpopulate booking. For example, look at booking. Female 1 has one in it on special needs. There were nobody in female holding F2. Female 3 had one female, special needs, separation. One H1 and 2, again, separation. H3 was our pre-arraignment holding cell. At that time, those were people who hadn't been there very long, were still waiting various stages of the booking process. H4, special needs. H7, we actually have 4 bunk beds in that room. Those are people who over the weekend had come in, could not post bond or had to wait and to go to court till Monday morning. So they were able actually to sleep on bunk beds as opposed to sleep on the hard concrete in H3. So that's why you see a number of 7 in there. You look at the A2, which is the other half of the women. We had 6 women in A1, no women in A2. So aside from the women in booking, we had a total of 8 women. Or in addition to the women in booking, we had 8 women in custody at the time. So we don't have the ability to, while we've adjusted our schedules for programs, we don't have the ability to utilize segregation cells downtown or at the satellite jail yet. The only ones we have are downtown. And that's the separation issues that we are trying to deal with. Many of you have seen this in some form or fashion before in other private discussions we've had with you, but I take any questions.
Mr. Kibler.
Thank you for this. This was very enlightening. Just to make sure I fully understand what you're suggesting. Yesterday was a very good day in terms of population. Very low, good day. If, let's say for instance, every day is a good day and we wanted to move everybody to the satellite jail, here's what would have to happen. We'd have to have isolation rooms. We'd have to have a special section for your what I'll consider your more role model inmates in order to give them more special privileges per what we did with ILPP. And we'd also want an area for those who need to be segregated either because of fear for their own safety or something else. Are those the three main categories of things that we need to figure out if we want to get rid of the downtown jail and go to the satellite jail? Those are the three things we're going to have to hit? Or is there more than that?
There's probably a couple more. I think generally what you speak of is true. We put together an arrangement yesterday to actually move everybody. It wasn't ideal. And like I said, when we're trying to make the best of what we can in the best way we can, and we would need segregation cells, not of the style we have now. We don't like the isolation cells we have now. We're stuck with them. We'll make the best use of them we can. Sheriff Walsh included some jail design guide documents with his letter that he sent you, and he talks about the different special housing needs, the decisions of how they'll be made, where they'll be housed, and the different discussions along those lines. It would be appropriate to have, let me give you an example. If somebody were to have sleep apnea and be a breathing machine they had to sleep with at night, none of our cells have electricity or immediate access to electricity so that when the family brings that device in, the inmate could sleep in the back. It's just a general minimum classification inmate who is required to stay with us. There's no place for us to plug in a machine and allow them to have their prescribed equipment. They have to be housed in booking in the cells that are not necessarily designed for somebody like that. And ability to have mental health, not so much a ward, but a design that's more appropriate to allow for a change in the staff supervision. Let's go to a direct supervision, and it's not so much individual, isolated, secluded cells. But so there's a lot of different pieces to go. Did I answer that question for you?
Patsy?
Thank you. I have two information questions and then to the second information question, sort of a general concept. You mentioned a criminal justice executive committee. Who is on that?
That's the monthly committee that we have with the sheriff, the chief judge, the court administrator, the county administrator, the probation director, the state's attorney, the public defender.
Okay.
That
right.
group.
I said, just if the public's watching, then they know what the makeup of that is. And do you have a ballpark percentage of how many of the individuals you have in the jail that you would categorize more likely being there because of mental health issues?
That's tough.
Ballpark, you know, I realize it's a range and it will vary, but 10%, 2%?
Probably in these numbers, 10 to 15%.
10 to 15%. Okay. Then that sort of leads me to sort of the general question. I know that Community Elements has built some collaborative bridges with Presence and with Carl. I don't know all the details of it, so this may be a little bit of a clumsy question. Are the bridges that they're building with those two medical facilities in the community, is that going to help you all at the jail in relationship to some of these individuals who probably should be, the majority of their issues are more mental health than, say, a minor indiscretion?
I would hope so. But the thing that I do know from my experience of the past couple of years and working with Community Elements and in the events, mm-hmm. there's not the capacity to treat in the community for a large number of these folks. And the partnership that we have through the funding of the Mental Health Board with Community Elements, Prairie Center, Francis mm-hmm. Nelson, that mm-hmm. whole group, that the partnership that we started, the linkages are intended to reduce the return, the recidivism. And we don't yet have a full grasp of how expansion, and we hope to move into this expansion of actually registering eligible people for the Affordable Care Act. We're going to start that with
right.
Community Elements. And
I appreciate
we don't know how that's going to impact our recidivism. But, you know, we look at these numbers and we think that some of this has to do with the change in policing where we've instituted the citation in mm-hmm. lieu of arrest. Some of this does. We have a greater focus on the mental health and the impact in the community with this, the crisis intervention training and the officers, and we realize that. Mm-hmm. We support the efforts that are being taken to keep our population down. But we keep coming back to how do we manage what we do have to have,
okay.
and our facility doesn't help us.
That those are helpful, and then I have one last question. When you all are talking about all this, and I certainly appreciate the fact that you have been mulling it over and took advantage of Cal, and I know you did that sort of on a parallel track that we were on. The spaces at the nursing home are underused. Has anybody talked about a wing of the nursing home and the beds there to be used for some of this?
Not to my knowledge. I know that there was some public comments or different suggestions. I have not been involved in that. The current inmate population would probably not be best served, and that current status, mm-hmm. plus our staffing, okay. at this level right now, we have three officers 24/7 at minimum working at the downtown jail.
Okay.
Moving all those inmates would give us a net three at the satellite, but we can't do that. So if we expand our options, we would need to increase our personnel, and that's going to be a difficult pot to fill.
Okay, all that's very helpful to understand. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Rosales.
I had a question. Has the executive committee looked over the ILPP proposal and seen what they could possibly use? Because I had heard some discussion that actually this is a worthless survey, study, that none of that could be actually done other than what they currently are doing, which is reducing the number of cases and actually doing a lot of pre-trial. So is there anything out of this document that the executive committee has discussed that could be useful for these recommendations that Dan Walsh is referring to?
I'm not sure which document you refer to, but I can tell you is what from being at the meetings, and essentially I do almost all the talking like I feel like I'm doing tonight. But the things that have been discussed at the Criminal Justice Executive Committee meetings and it have been in place have been, like I said, citation in lieu of arrest. That was something immediately out of the ILPP study. Other things out of the ILPP study, the Sheriff's Office has implemented. We've moved the women, as they suggested. We have reclassified our inmates, as the study suggested. So, from the Sheriff's perspective, that's where I'm comfortable speaking to you at. We have implemented a good deal of the ILPP and the Criminal Justice Task Force recommendations. A lot of those, we support the direction that these things are moving to, but don't have any direct operational impact at the Sheriff's Office.
There hasn't been any discussion on additional facilities like in Rantoul, possibly some of these not in use motels that are running the community, so we could do no. early release, sort of being supervised by a how would I say it, a parole officer.
No, there's not been any discussion at that group about that. This group spends a lot of time looking at the charts that I've shown you and talk about ways from the law enforcement side or the criminal justice side that we can try to help deal with the numbers.
Then the reason I'm asking these questions is that we did spend money on a study. We are spending money on community elements, and I'm just wondering, are we throwing good money after bad because there's still needs that haven't been met, and yet we're continuously discussing that perhaps we could continuously build to provide an adequate facility so that our officers could be safe as well as the inmates could be safe and they could be cared for. When you say mental, I mean medical, is that physical health or is that mental health?
Well, on that question, when I say medical, there's a medical separation needed, a wound or for example, if they have a cast, they can't be housed with the rest because they have it's a weapon, a club. Yeah, thank you. Different things in the medical category. It is a very broad selection in regards to that. If you don't mind, your response to it, is it a waste? I'm going to tell you that I don't believe it was. I believe that there are a lot of things that we've talked about. I believe that the numbers that you see up here have been a result of a lot of different police agencies, community actions, and all of this going together that are important to keep the numbers down and to actually allow us to have these discussions. Sheriff Walsh has been very specific in his communications for the past several years that the facility is the issue for us to manage the inmates. The rest of the impact of the criminal justice system appears to be having positive results here, and we're getting a conversation going on. I'm not uncomfortable at all with the directions, the conversations we're having, but we really can more efficiently and economically manage our office if we can consolidate and care for that in one place.
Because there were some comments made by some of our board members, and I believe at our last meeting, and I know this is a facilities committee, that instead of perhaps giving $100,000 to community elements, that we could use $100,000 to refurbish that downtown jail and trying to provide more ventilation and heating and trying to reduce the insulation on some of those walls that they get frozen in the winter, or stopping the water from coming in. And there's money that needs to be spent on that facility that we don't have any. So if we don't have that type of money, the question was brought up that $100,000 could be better used on the facilities than on mental health programs to the community elements.
Sheriff Walsh was very specific in a question. That question was asked of him, I think, at the Republican caucus and in another place. And he's specific in his letter here today that he's requesting we begin the process of engaging the planner and architect to assess the specific needs in these areas, develop plans to deal with these needs considering our operations and current facilities, and consider options. And he's very specific in bringing that. We're not asking for an architectural component. Okay. But we need to discuss these separation needs, the guides, and get some suggestions and identifications. And we're tweaking ourselves what we check and track so that when you ask the question what the medical is, I expect the captain's going to give me a subgroup of that medical so I know what it is. We're going to try to come up with some data dictionaries to help define that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Kibler? Mr. McGuire?
Yeah, thank you for this report and the opportunity to speak. And I like the whole process we're talked about. What's going on in the community? You know, the options we've seen. You know, from youth assessment program, the pretrial program with the investigator, hopefully the reentry program. Everything everybody's done to try to bring the numbers down to hopefully keep people that maybe we can keep out of the system, maybe. See things change for families and things that happen in our community. And now we've come to the point where we're talking about what happens in the jail. And that's kind of somewhat the same issue, because we want a jail, if people have to go to jail, that may be safer and healthier for both the people that are there and the people that have to work there. And, you know, when we list this list, of people that have to be separated, it's actually a pretty long list when you look at it, with medical issues, gang members, pretrial, and like you've talked about, it's a building that, you know, when you take away the downtown jail, that has to have a lot of different things happening in it to be able to do that. Kind of a different story, but my mother was in the nursing home, and our family has 10 kids in it, and there's an older lady that was in the room with her. And it's the kind of the same thing. Every time six family members showed up, this poor lady went through a horrible time. I can imagine somebody in a mental health, like you talked about, issue, trying to go through the process of, you know, incarceration and getting through that process. And if we're trying to help them not come back, but yet we've got them locked up in the downtown jail where it's a hellhole, you know, how do they get through this process, you know? So I'm hoping the committee does decide to start the process to build a building that fits that is that next piece of the puzzle that improves our criminal justice system for everybody in the community.
Mr. Maxwell, you have not spoken yet.
Well, I'll think out loud. We have 182 bed capacity at the satellite jail. Can we reconfigure that jail to meet our needs as far as the classification and still have a factor of safety for increased census over time? Or are we actually going to have to increase the total number of beds at satellite jail by some sort of an addition? Thank you.
What we've talked about is not to pursue greater capacity than what we currently have when you add the two facilities together. Okay, but what we don't have is at the satellite jail, that segregation, special needs, the capacity to address those that we increasingly see, those that are in a mental health crisis or some sort of medical issue, substance abuse, the entire gamut. And we do know that there's an increase in that. So the additions that the studies that we're talking about is, you know, is it a wing that deals with a pod that has both mental health and medical capabilities, and the medical and mental health providers are actually housed right there? The providers are there nearby. They have offices, or they can walk in the day room and interact. And the, you know, we can change the concept. We're looking to do more than just build, but change the way we supervise, the ideas that we have. And that's what part of this is, what the sheriff is requesting that contact for, and that you consider.
Did I just hear you say you still need the 300 and some odd bed capacity somewhere in the system?
I don't know what the total is. I don't think we need to go above that number, because we're working hard to keep the numbers down as we are now.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosales?
My question is really not a question. It's probably a statement that this is probably the wrong committee to be asking these types of questions, because there is no rehabilitation going on at the jails, correct?
There is no treatment.
And it's just warehousing bodies. So when in a facilities committee, we're talking about how could we safely warehouse bodies for an indefinite period of time. What I would like to see some kind of discussion is so that these individuals, so when they come in and they leave, that they're better citizens, that they have a trade, that they have their GED or ESL classes, programs that could better them as citizens, so that when they leave, they could be a better contributing citizen in this community instead of just warehousing, because they come in and when they leave, they're a lot worse than when they first came in, and they're real hardcore. And it's like, well, I did my, you know, education in prison, you know. I've done 10 years. Oh, I've done 20 years, you know. So the more years you do, the more hardcore it is, the more intimidating you become in the community. And I don't think that resolves anything. It just bothers me to be talking about space and warehousing cattle. And to me, the concept is just wrong. And that's all I wanted to say. And it was not a question. It was a statement.
If you don't mind, I do have something I want to point out. They're not cattle. They're humans. And for us, the average length of stay in our jail is less than 15 days. So the average inmate is there less than 15 days. The long-term ability to do some of the function that you speak of just does not exist in our system. The average length of stay for sentenced folks is in the 20s to less than 30 days. When you take the total average, and I don't have those numbers in front of me, I'm working off some things in my mind, but you know, I know this is true because when we looked at doing the MRT programs for the women, they have a goal of at least a 30-day stay so they can interact with them so much. But our average length of stay for women is not that long.
Yeah, for some reason I thought there was a year or two.
No, sir.
Some of them would
spend. No, our average length of stay for inmates is a very transient thing. It's something that's highlighted in the ILPP study as well, and I can back it up with our recent facts. Fortunately, the average length of stay is down, and that's something that's very important to us.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, since everybody seems to have run their course, I'm going to take the opportunity of being chair to say a few things. First of all, I think, Geraldo, you had a very good point. I was challenged a little bit here in this discussion because a couple times I almost wanted to rule people out of order because we weren't talking about facilities. We were talking about justice issues. So what I would like to encourage the committee is that we have gotten some very important information here tonight. And I think the committee should be absorbing this because at some point there's going to be a decision about what we need to do with our facilities in our whole review of what we can do about our justice system. But I don't think that we're going to solve a lot of those questions in this committee. I would much prefer to be having that conversation during the justice portion of the committee of the whole, because I think the whole board should be here and participating in some of those questions. Facilities is an outcome of that discussion. I'll go back to what Cal said several times, is this community needs to decide what it needs a jail for and how it's going to use a jail and how much jail it needs. He said that several times in the process. That is a decision I see from the county board in the justice committee rather than necessarily the facilities committee making that decision. So I encourage the facilities committee to understand the issues so that we can start being prepared for what we might be asked to do as part of creating the longer term solution. I wish, Alan, that I could be as optimistic as the numbers seem to say, because I looked at that chart very carefully and I know we're in the best possible time of the year for looking at the numbers. I know that this winter, in fact, and winter in general, is going to be a time where we may have the most flexibility. So I don't want to diss on your numbers, but I don't know that that means anything in July. Is that fair to say?
It doesn't mean anything in July because we will see an increase in arrests. The thing that I shared with the command staff and the sheriff the other day is that if I look at the history of the increases from the winter to the maximum point in late summer, we're going to end up with a pretty good range. We're going to have a pretty good idea that generally is not going to, you know, there's exceptions, obviously, but we're going to be in good numbers when we come through the summer. But it's all tenuous. If one thing changes in the system, a judge goes down, the prosecutor changes, the sheriff changes, if any of these pieces change, then those numbers change. So I stay optimistic, and I'm going to work with as much as I can, but this is a very important part of the piece.
So I think we have to remember that this needs to be part of the discussion that's happening in justice, because it needs to be more than the six of us who are here tonight making decisions about what gets built. We may be involved with how it gets built, but I don't think we should be making that decision. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on. We have our facilities director here, and he has a report, several items to review.
Thank you. First is to just have a brief discussion and bring you up to date on our thought process for, excuse me, I need to move a little closer, on replacing the mechanicals at the Brookins Administration Building, this building. Most mechanicals are original. We would like to hire an MEP to help us complete a thorough inspection analysis of all the mechanical systems provide us with a written report that would include all the HVAC, electrical, plumbing, fire protection systems. Report would contain an energy analysis of our current system, as well as the building and other things, as well as proposed replacements to pieces and parts of our big puzzle here. In addition, we would look for the MEP to help formalize a master plan, knowing that we can't afford to do it all at one time. We would be looking to stage the pieces. The first large piece is probably the two large chillers that are out back of the building. That may change after the analysis, but if I was asked to guess what it'd be today, it's probably the chillers, although I've yet to experience a summer in this building, from every one I've talked to. If it gets above 80, it's kind of warm in the building. So with addition to that, we would look for the MEP to help us write the and craft the bid documentation. They would assist us through that process. This purchasing of equipment, based upon what I've been informed about our budget status, would be spread out over a couple fiscal years. In addition to that, we would look through the MEP to advise us and oversee the installation. We're acting more like a general contractor with this proposed a project or several projects where we would have an MEP assist us. We would do actually some of the work. Some of the work we'll have to go out and hire, whether it's a plumber, electrician, pipe fitter, whatever is necessary that we can't fulfill. But we think that we can save ourselves some dollars in the long run and be able to stretch this project a little bit within the confines of several of our budget years. So with that, I think we're asking or coming to you to ask for permission to seek an MEP to do an RFP and get this process started, looking to try and get into this spring.
Mr. Maxwell.
Thank you. That kind of goes along with what we started talking about, I think back in December, maybe. May have been in January, I believe it was in December, that at some point we would be going out with an RFP to look for an MEP, possibly also a civil. You could write your RFP so that you do have both functions covered, as well as a structural capability, and there are a few firms around town that could do all that. So I would think that's a great idea. I don't know if you need a motion to do that, but I'd be more than happy to make that motion that authorizes this process to move forward. If we have to go to is it policy with it first?
Deb, can you fill us in on what we need to do?
What's the process, Deb?
Under your purchasing policy, this committee has the authority to approve the release of an RFQ, RFP that is relevant to facilities issues. Okay. And so it does not need to go to policy.
I so move then.
And just for clarification, we are talking about an RFQ utilizing the QBS process, correct? Because this is engineering services?
Yes,
that's correct.
Thanks.
Okay, so I have a motion by Mr. Maxwell and seconded by Mr. Rosales. Did I hear that?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion. Mr. Hartke.
Yeah, I think this is a very good idea, and especially looking forward on the long term, what we can do about this building, somewhat in conjunction with what we're doing with IGBA. I would hope that this engineering firm that we look for, one of the qualifications I like to see in them is experience with green options, energy efficient options, and even experience with maybe working with CDAC, with Energy Now grants, because there's a lot of, there is money out there, but you know, we haven't been real great at capturing it evidently, so you know, it'd be nice to get some of the bigger numbers than what we have got. So I would support this idea as long as, you know, those considerations were made.
Mr. Kibler.
More of a point of order. Because we don't have an RFP or an RFQ in front of us to debate or criticize or mock up or add to, is the motion to just start the process of creating an RFP? And if so, does that even require a motion? Because we're not validating, we're not approving anything, we're not sending anything out. today. We're just discussing the idea of doing it.
That all depends on what the motion was, which is what I was going to ask. Are you approving the development and release of an RFQ, which means it would not necessarily come back to you before it went out? Was that the motion? I'm not certain.
I would make that motion.
You made the motion,
yes.
And that was your motion.
Yes,
so it would be for the release of an RFQ for MEP services. And
yes.
That Mr. Hartke has added some language that he would want to be included in consideration in that RFQ and certainly in an evaluation process. You might also want to talk about the evaluation process. Does this entire committee want to be engaged in how do you want to do that once the RFQ is issued? Those are all legitimate questions at this point.
I just want to make sure, Mr. Rosales, that was the thing that you wanted to second. You're still comfortable with that? Okay. Mr. Kibler.
So I would recommend that we table this motion and instead send it back to our director of facilities and our facilities chair to work on appropriate language to bring forth to the board and discuss it, as opposed to just sending it out. That's just my personal preference on this. So I make a motion to move this to the next facilities meeting.
Okay, I'm hearing that as a motion to defer to the next facilities meeting, and seconded by Mr. Hartke. Discussion of the motion to defer, please.
The motion to defer would involve then go ahead and prepare the RFQ and begin the process so we can read it, but we don't want to just issue it without all of us looking at it one time. I think that's the spirit of what we're talking about.
And the goal would be then to be able to issue it first thing in April, since that would be our next meeting. Dana, would that be acceptable?
Yes. And as the RFQ goes out, it would be working obviously with you, Stan, the chair, on formulating a committee to review. I'm sure that whoever from the committee can be members, as well as some of the administrative staff of the review committee, as we get into the piece about selecting a firm here.
Yeah, I think it would. You would be. You should suggest that in the language that we see in April, whether you want a couple of people or all of us to help with that. It sounded like you wanted a couple, which would be my choice too. But okay, any further discussion on the motion to defer this to next month? Seeing none, all those in favor say, Ms. Petrie, sorry, I almost went off without you.
That's okay.
Are you speaking to our motion to defer?
Yes, I would like to. Well, I have to speak to that, because if you defer it, then it's moot. I'd like to build on what Mr. Hartke mentioned, and that is, as Mr. Bruner works with others to bring this together, that they look at the timeline of getting money from DCEO, because there is money for chillers there.
Thank you, Patsy. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. That motion passes unanimously. We will talk about that again in April, and Dana, we're expecting an RFQ to review at that time.
Van and I will get busy.
All right.
Item number two, just a quick update on the Elias demolition. Occupational Environmental Health Solutions, OEHS, has completed their review. They took about 96 samples from the approximately 5,000 square foot of building that we're going to be taking down. We did come back with asbestos in several areas, window caulking, wallboard material. We did not test the floor purposefully. We felt it would be a waste of time. We're assuming, because of the age of the facility, and we've seen this in a number of buildings, that the vinyl has asbestos in it, as well as the mastic in the floor. So documentation from IGW has been put together. Both Van and I have got it. We're going through it to start putting together a document for bidding purpose for demolition. appropriate precautions and reportings would have to be taken place because of the asbestos. It will be handled up front. We've contacted PACA here locally. There's a number of things that they are interested in within that space, handrails, doors. There's one or two tubs that they're interested in with, as well as some old furniture that exists within the building. We've worked with the county attorney Van to come up with a draft. Actually, it's a finalized document that basically releases us from any liability from any of the individuals from PACA who will be doing the work. I've talked to PACA. They'll sign whatever document. They're very accustomed to doing that. In fact, they sent us some samples of information that they've signed before. So we'll look to try and have them out sometime this month, and we will look to try and do the demolition this spring, trying to have it concluded by sometime in mid to early June.
All right, next.
Any questions on
Elias? I didn't see any questions.
Okay. Just an information piece. After 4 months, one of the things that I think is very important to the facility and the facility plant folks that would enable us to do our jobs better is a building inventory database. We currently have nothing to go off of. It would be very helpful if we were able to build a database with all of our buildings, all of our mechanicals, also have a work order system that is tied to that records not only the work request that comes through, but the work that each of our facility staff members does with respect to whether it's a mechanical system, a building project. So that database is constantly updated with information. It can share and show us track records of what's going on with facilities, mechanicals. There's just a lot of things. Preventative maintenance scheduling would be included in that. Inventory and purchasing. It'd be wonderful to have an inventory of what pieces and parts we do have. And as we go through and use, they could be recorded and where they've been utilized. That doesn't exist. We do record on paper, but it's very difficult with piles and piles of paper to go through to build some sort of track record and to indicate what problems one may see. So we're doing an investigation just through the internet. We've talked to Stan, has got some good ideas about some people who have successful software programs. James has connected me with his housing folks in their facility. They seem to have a terrific software program. So we're going to try and find something that looks good, that would fit our needs. We're price conscious, obviously. We try and do that within our means and our budget, but we'll work obviously with Deb and Van as we move forward and try and identify something that could possibly really assist us and give us a leg up for the future.
Mr. Maxwell.
Is there any possibility of using the GIS program to do some of this work? As far as the mapping of our buildings and the utilities that serve them and that sort of thing?
I'm unaware, but that's something we could certainly take a look at.
Deb?
Yeah, that is not part of their core function, so we would have to contract with them if we wanted them to provide those services.
That might be a cost-effective way of doing it. We'll just have to look into it. Thank you, Deb.
Yeah, I will say that I would be surprised if their services would be a good fit for what we're talking about here. We're talking, if we were to go into one of these systems, we might be importing building plans and drawings into them, but it's usually not more on the GIS level, which is mapping locations. I'm sure there are tools that do that in addition to the core blueprints and maintenance cycle and ticket management systems. But the issue is, you know, these
These are major systems, so they can range from extremely expensive to less expensive. There are some that are more, I guess you would call it, cloud-based at this point, where you're not building an infrastructure to hold all of the information. And I would encourage us to look that direction, because when I see this, I see like a third to a half of an IT person behind it to make it function, because I know in our situation, and we have slightly larger square footage, but in our situation, we have at least one dedicated person to this and on this kind of work, and fractions of a few others that contribute to it. So it can make things a lot easier, but it depends on utilization. I imagine, you know, the things that before Dana was here, the summaries that Alan was putting together for us, you know, he had to kind of struggle to get some of those together, as opposed to going to a particular report and say, what's the status of all of our routes, which is what you get with a tool like this, if it's properly implemented and the data is properly maintained. So I think this might be a very important tool as far as efficiency. And something that Dana didn't talk about is most of these tools have two other aspects of it, and that is you can track work and you can track square footage of the types of work that you're doing, and you can get estimates on how much time it should take to do certain things, so you can really figure out what your efficiency should be and maybe free up staff time to focus on other issues. So any other comments on that? Okay.
The next item is just a quick update on the clock tower. I've been working with Bruce Hannon, Aladdin Electric, and Springfield Electric, and trying to identify some fixtures that would provide adequate lighting to meet at least the same levels with the fixtures that exist inside the clock tower, which are the lights on the clock face, the four faces, as well as the fixtures on the exterior of the tower itself. I'd like to go to LED fixtures, you know, much more utility friendly. They operate for pennies versus a lot of dollars we're spending with the current fixtures. There's a total of 24 fixtures within the tower, and on the exterior, there's eight that light up the faces. There's 16 that light up the exterior. We have and found two for clock faces. In fact, we've installed them for kind of a run-through test and a litmus test for, you know, how does it look in comparing to the other. So if you get a chance to drive by, maybe you're on your way home this evening, take a look at the west clock face versus the other three, and see what you think. Let me know. We've reached out to a number of the community members who were part of the fundraising team and you know, part of Bruce's team that that put everything together, Judge Hansen or Jensen, a couple other folks. We think we've identified some exterior fixtures. We've asked the manufacturer to send us two, and I think that they've all agreed to date. So we're hoping later this month to get a couple of fixtures in. We won't be able to get them up top and install a couple to give us an idea, but we will take them out and have kind of a test at night to see what they look like up against the building and the lower portion of the tower to give us some idea. I think when Alan was initially looking at this over the summer, he got some pricing back, and they were relatively expensive, as some LED fixtures can run in the $600-$700 per fixture. But the ones that we're looking at are considerably less, well under $300. We're reaching out. I've already had a conversation with Bruce about possibly the committee fund paying for this, which he thinks is a definite. We reached out to some folks who are in charge of that fund, and we'll continue to work with them. So we hope to have some more news on that. But please stop by, take a look at the clock face on the west side, and compare it to the others. And then we'll let you know when the next test will be for the exterior.
Any questions?
Okay. Last piece is...
That's okay.
Yep.
Mr. Jay, go ahead.
I was just curious, the LEDs, I assume the life expectancy is substantially more than the regular lighting.
Yeah, they're rated for 10 to 12 years, and at the end of that time period, they'll be at 70% of their functioning capacity. So in actuality, they could go longer. Now, obviously, the light that they will supply will diminish, whether it's, you know, acknowledgeable, you'll actually see it, don't know, but, you know, the current fixtures, bulbs do not last that long, and we don't have a meter just on the tower, so I can't tell exactly what we're spending, but, you know, they're pricey fixtures in terms of today's utility use. I can tell you that because they're mercury vapor, so they use a little energy.
Mr. Alex, did you have a question?
Okay, the last piece is, as we're just getting ready to get started with our Illinois Green Business Association, we're working on the contract with them. It'll be finalized this month. We've had several meetings with Ryan Wolber, who will be working with us. We are looking to set up a Brookins staff working committee. As most of you know, we've got a lot of people within Brookins, but they're not all administrative staff. There's a lot of elected officials within the building, and to get good assistance and buy-in and buy-in from all those offices, we think it's important that we get somebody representing each of those groups or a number of them to help us through the committee. Once we get that committee, we'll have a meeting and kick off probably here in 2 weeks or so with Ryan. There's a number of assessment items to go through to find out, you know, where we currently are. Once we complete their assessment, the committee plus the Green Business Association will help us put together a plan of management practices that gets us to the certification level. It'll take us probably 4 to 6 months to get through that process. Then there's a verification process. And at the end of it, then there's a certification process that will just hopefully just take a little bit of time. But we look for that to end up, you know, sometime this fall. The Green Business Association will also, they've offered to assist with finding and helping us with any CDAC funding. I will also tell you, we've talked to a couple of local companies that can help along those lines here in the last week. As we look, you know, for this MEP group to do similar things, Josh, you know, we're reaching out to a number of people to try and be helpful along those lines. So it's just not on us and people we're hiring, but we'll try and approach it through a number of angles. Any questions?
No, thank you for moving forward on that. I can't wait till we're certified. I think it's money well spent for us. Next thing on our agenda is the semi-annual review of closed session minutes. I have a memo from Mr. DeThorne at the state's attorney's office that says we have no minutes that we need to release. They should remain closed. So I would entertain a motion that we can keep our currently closed minutes closed.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Kibler, seconded by Mr. Hartke. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion passes. Is there any other business that committee members would like to bring at this moment? Seeing none, I have the chair's report, and you know what? I can tell you that we're going to meet April 8th in the Lyle Shields meeting room, but I can't tell you what Stan was thinking about with regard to facility tours. Since we've got a meeting scheduled for here, oh, do you have something?
In one of the earlier meetings, it was canceled, I believe it was in January because of snow. We were going to take a tour of Brookins.
Okay.
So if that still is of interest to folks, we can arrange a tour through this building. at that next meeting.
Would everybody be comfortable with doing that? I think we were planning to do it at 6 o'clock. Was that what we...
Yeah, 5:45.
5:45?
With a 6:30 start.
Okay. Everybody okay with that? Okay, we'll look forward to do that. We had no action that would go on consent agenda because our only action was deferred to next month. So I'd entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved. Second.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Me. You don't get a vote.
My code.